The Athletic.
This is the Athletic Football Podcast weekend preview with a full Premier League menu and a main course special of the Manchester Derby. How exciting. I'm Michael Bailey. I hope this finds you well. And for this one, we're joined by the Athletic trio of your Black Country friend and mine, Tim Spears.
MB, how are we doing?
Yeah, very good, thank you. What floated your boat this week, Tim?
I'm up for the cup. Enjoyed a week of cup action. Felt very magical last night watching Wolves beat Brighton 1-0.
Magic.
I love the FA Cup. My favourite and least favourite moments of my football supporting life have come from the FA Cup. It stirs me. So yeah, I'm looking forward to losing to Coventry in the quarterfinals, which will be a new low, I think.
That's the way the magic works. Love that. Joey Derso is here too. Hello, Joey. How's your boat this week?
It's all right. I'm also very up for the cup, but I felt this fifth round situation where it's all squished into a midweek, Maidstone United, obviously they got battered against Coventry, but I was sort of barely aware that it was happening. It feels like a bit of a damp squib not having the FA Cup on the weekend. I don't like it.
They threw it straight on in a Monday, and then you had to kind of keep repeating that it had happened through the week to make sure no one had missed it. That was the way that the BBC did that, at least anyway. John McKenzie is here as well. John, are you excited about the prospect of Leeds being back in the Premier League? Yes, I know that it's not actually confirmed yet.
You've asked those two about boats, and you didn't ask me. I lived on a boat, you know, for a year in London.
I did not know that.
I'm a boat expert.
Okay, well, how's your boat?
I'm not on it anymore, but yeah, it's doing well. It's up for sale right now if you want to buy a boat.
Is it in better condition than when you left it?
Yeah, I think so, probably.
Well, that does say a lot, doesn't it? Let's move on to this week's fixtures, shall we? Or this weekend's fixtures, I should say. In our fixture formation, we've got a full complement of 10 games, and we're looking at a 7-2-1 Saturday to Monday shape, which is obviously kind of the one you want, I think. That's the impression.
That's the one Jose Mourinho was using by the end at Man United, wasn't it? The 7-2-1.
And it worked. Or did it? Probably not. Let's go. Now, we begin with 3 p.m. kickoffs. So don't go looking for a Saturday lunchtime accompaniment. Those 3 p.m. GMT games are Newcastle hosting Tim Spears Wolves. Big game for Eddie Howe. Aren't they all? Tottenham against Crystal Palace, which we'll get stuck into later. Nottingham Forest host Liverpool at the City Ground. Will Klopp keep faith with the kids? He'll probably have to. Misfiring Brentford and misfiring Chelsea do West London battle. Everton's first game since their points deduction got a reduction. That's at home to West Ham, which feels like a kind draw. Fulham against Brighton too. Then we move on to Saturday's 5:30 p.m. clash, which is Luton against Aston Villa. On to Sunday, which kicks off with one for the purists as Burnley face Bournemouth at Turf Moor. That's at 1 p.m. 3:30 p.m. brings the main event as Manchester City host Manchester United before Monday night football as Arsenal travel to the welcoming surrounds of Bramall Lane to take on Sheffield United at 8 p.m. What a menu that is, by the way. So let's crack on with that big game in Manchester. Always good to start with a reminder, I find. So here's what happened the last time the two sides met at Old Trafford back in October.
Into the face of the Stratford end. And City are on their way. Bernardo Silva. Rodri clouted it, Onana reacted, Haaland's onto it, and Foden steers it home.
Lots of goals. There were lots of goals. Tim, you are Erik ten Hag for the purposes of this next question. How do you stop the same thing happening again?
I've no idea what I'm doing, so no idea. I'll go back to being me again. Hey! No, I still don't know what I'm doing. Yeah, that was a real non-event. The reverse fixture, 3-0, sort of flattered United. They were a bit of a shapeless mess that day. And it was one of City's best performances of the season. They were out there controlling, sort of clinical best. I guess the difference between then and now is United have a slightly better idea of what their better team is. Their midfield that day was Eriksen, Amrabat and McTominay. You imagine that would be completely different tomorrow. Hoyland wasn't scoring at the time. I know he's out injured tomorrow, but still. It's hard to make a case because, you know, particularly with the injuries they've got. So the back four against Nottingham Forest on Wednesday night was Dalot, Lindelof, Varane and Amrabat. Maguire might be back. And he's crucial because there'll be an onslaught. I guess the only sort of case I can make is that the last time we discussed the Man United game on here that we were just widely expecting them to get trounced in was Liverpool away. And they got a 0-0 draw there. I mean, they conceded their usual sort of 30, 40 shots. But still, they got away with a 0-0 draw. So there's some hope for them, but not much, not much.
Yeah, I suppose shapeless mess feels like a word we've used often for Manchester United. And the last time I was on here, we were talking about how Rasmus Højlund had found his form. And then he picks up the injury and you kind of realise how important he'd been. They do seem like they're missing him.
Yeah, Man United are a team who play a style of football which they're going to benefit from having a sort of classic number nine at the top of the field. So not having him available and having to shift someone like Marcus Rashford out there is not only moving one of their better wide forwards into a central position, but you're also not playing a player who you would necessarily suit the style of play that they have. So yeah, it's a disaster for them, really.
I mean, they do find a way, don't they, Joey, United, on occasions, a bit like against Nottingham Forest in the FA Cup.
Yeah, and against Luton and against Villa, and that, you know, they've won a bunch of games recently while often looking pretty bad. And I think they're lucky to be sixth in the league. You know, they're so poor defensively, they're so open, they give away so many shots, and they've now found this sort of brilliant cluster of really young attackers, so they score some goals. But I think, you know, Erik ten Hag is on really shaky ground at the moment. They just do not look like a good football team, to be honest, and I don't see them winning this weekend.
Yeah, interesting hearing you say that they concede a lot of shots. I think before the Forest game, they'd conceded 100 shots in the previous five games. And to put that into context, in the whole season in the Premier League so far, Man City have conceded 197. So you're talking like conceding a ton of chances more than other teams at the elite level. And let's not even get started on Arsenal, who just don't concede chances at all right now.
It's like just a shot every 5 minutes, basically. In the last eight, they've conceded 148 shots. That's 18 every match, one every 5 minutes.
Can anyone make a hipster case for Onana being player of the season?
It's an interesting thing, isn't it, that everyone was talking about Onana saving Man United because he would be able to be the ball-playing goalkeeper that they needed. And actually, he's become the new David De Gea because he's now super important from a shot-stopping point of view because he's having to face so many of them.
Although they might have still been in the Champions League had he not intervened there. So
that
swings and roundabouts, isn't it? Swings and roundabouts. I mean, there was a period in the Manchester derby when this was all about United. We could talk about all the United players who had scored this many goals against City, and which have you. As it happens now, City have won four of the last five Premier League meetings with United, and Erling Haaland. Only Sergio Aguero has scored more goals in Manchester derbies than Erling Haaland for City.
Quick.
At least, I know it is. It's only three games in the Premier League. But of course, I guess City hadn't had that period where they had such success against United. It's very different now, though, of course, Tim. And Haaland looks, well, he looks back to his best. After all those doubters, Tim, all those doubters saying he'd lost his way or...
Yeah, he's now only up to 79 goals in 83 appearances for Man City. I remember going to this fixture last year and City went 6-1 up, and it was an annihilation, to be honest. United got a couple of late goals back to flatter themselves again against City, but it's ominous is how you describe how they look at the moment. I mean, in midweek, just stunning, really. The numbers alone, De Bruyne has already got more assists in the FA Cup than anyone else after one start. He's got more assists this calendar year in all competitions than Fernandes, Odegaard and James Maddison have got all season. Haaland scored as many goals the other night as Rashford has in the Premier League all season. It's just ridiculous. I mean, they're sort of doing what Man United used to do, right? They're stepping up in as we approach springtime. And yeah, it does look ominous.
I do love the stat that Haaland's five goals against Luton means he's the first player to score five or more goals in an FA Cup match for a top flight club since George Best's six against Northampton in 1970.
Four De Bruyne assists in there as well, which I think that never happens. Four assists and four goals by the same person.
I think that's the thing, isn't it, Joey, that you've got a well-known axis of two players that have proven that they can just brush everyone aside and they're now hitting their straps. But I guess also City will have to be a little bit careful, especially with De Bruyne going forwards.
Yes, well, with injuries and, you know, wrapping him in cotton wool and making sure that he makes it to the end of the season, that must be a massive priority for them.
I do want to say that I played Rocket League last night with our good friend Joe Devine, and we played on the same team together, and I got eight assists in that game. So four assists doesn't sound that much. And it's only a 5-minute game as well. So what's De Bruyne playing at?
aren't you in a car?
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
And there's like a big cage.
Yeah, but apart from that.
It yeah. works perfectly, John. Yeah, I'll take it. Absolutely. One thing that was very sad, I thought, from the week is the sight of Jack Grealish back on the bench, having just re-injured his groin. I think it was obviously going to keep looking at it and seeing what to do. I think this was discussed on the Athletic podcast in the week as well. So give that a listen if you haven't caught it. But I feel for Jack Grealish because there is a player who is really important to Man City. And this season, it's just not really happened for him. And I don't know if there's a bit where he'll feel that he's kind of responsible for that, but also maybe it's just external events too.
Yeah, and a really important player for Man City as well, Jack Grealish. I think we talk a lot about how Pep Guardiola is really concerned to control games. And that's really important when it comes to his wide players as well. And at the moment, he's having to field like Bernardo Silva, Phil Foden, Jeremy Doku as the wide players, particularly on that left-hand side with Jeremy Doku. We've seen a few games recently where the control simply isn't there in the way that it is when you have Jack Grealish on the field. And they've conceded goals through that channel because they aren't able to either possess the ball safely enough or even press the ball when oppositions are building up through it as well. So, yeah, it's sad to see a player who was so fundamental to the treble winning side last season just not make it onto the pitch. And I do think that is one of the reasons why City have seemed a little bit more shaky this season as well.
We're going to come on to predictions in a moment, but to mark the special occasion of a Manchester derby, we're going to bring you a bit of trivia. Yes, this is called Who Got the Assist? Manchester Derby Edition. We've producer Mike has picked out three famous Manchester Derby goals from the past, and you'll have to guess not who scored the goal, but who provided the assist. So we're going to play the commentary clip to jog your memories. That's very nice of us, I think. Joey, you've got the first one. So first up, Joey, have a listen to this.
Rooney! Saw an overhead kick here earlier this season by Dimitar Berbatov, which was good enough, but this surpasses it. It is absolutely spectacular. It's one in a million from Wayne Rooney.
I'll go with Berbatov.
We've got the goal there, haven't we? We all know which goal it was with the overhead kick. You're going with
Dimitar Berbatov.
Dimitar Berbatov. It is not correct, I'm afraid. Either of you two guys got it.
It's from
idea.
A corner, right? So it's whoever was taking their
corner. I thought
corner,
it was from a deep right wing cross. So I would say a poor right back. So I don't know, Wes Brown.
A right back would have been my guess, but that's not correct either, although you are correct with the flank.
Yes. Half point for the flank.
It was Wayne Rooney's overhead kick on the 12th of February 2011. United beat City 2-1 at Old Trafford with a Nani assist.
Nani.
Leading to Rooney's overhead kick.
In my head, there's like a knockdown or something, but that's obviously completely wrong.
It's very difficult with the timelines. My first suggestion in my head was going to be Gary Neville, but I think he probably retired by then. I'm not sure. Question two, John, it's yours.
Rooney, up towards Ferdinand, cleared away as far as who's placed one for Michael Owen!
I think I was at university at this point. So
when were you at university?
An undergrad, so between 2004 and 2008.
You might have just finished.
I'm going to go with Darren Fletcher.
It was September the 20th, 2009, United 4, City 3, again at Old Trafford. Michael Owen's goal in the 6th minute of added time. It wasn't Darren Fletcher.
Believe.
Yes, Tim.
It was the man with the most assists in Premier League history.
Which was?
Brian Giggs.
Nailed it. Well done. Yes. Tim Spears picking up bonus points left, right and centre here. Joey, would you got that?
No.
Oh, you just say yes.
That's fine. When did Giggs retire?
probably after that assist, I reckon. He walked off the pitch.
He was 40, didn't he? Wow.
He played for a while, yeah.
He did. He did indeed. Well, Tim, it's your question next. Probably don't need a question, but here it is anyway.
Volleys it forward brilliantly and puts it on a plate for Dzeko again. It is six. Six of the best for Manchester City. United not just beaten, humiliated.
I can see it. It's a low left-footed sort of skimmed volley, I think, into Dzeko's path.
Very good.
So I would say David Silva.
Oh, he's nailed it. He's nailed it. It's described here as a sumptuous touch and half volley pass to Dzeko from David Silva to make it 6-1. Well, I think Tim is very much the champion there, but there is a bonus one for all of you to have a go. Maybe, Tim, you're just not allowed, or you can decide if it's right or not. For a bonus point, and this is apparently a bit harder, shout if you know it.
That's another City corner. Stoppage time, 2 minutes of it at the end of the first half. A few chances. Killed in by and turned in by Vincent Kompany. Manchester City ahead, right on half time. Cometh the hour, cometh the captain.
Some great commentary. What do you reckon, John, Joey? Oh, John's got to the shrugging stage.
Or Man United corner taker.
Or Man City.
Yeah. I didn't even get that right. James Milner. Frank Lampard. It'll be someone random like that, won't it?
Joey?
Gareth Barry.
Vincent Kompany's goal on April the 30th, 2012. City won 1-0.
Yeah, no idea.
Have a guess, Tim. Corner taker.
David Silva.
Oh, he's gone and got it. It was a David Silva corner. Without that company goal, the infamous Aguero moment 13 days later probably wouldn't have happened. And with that, Tim, I crown you assist king of Who Got the Assist? Manchester Derby edition. Moving on to something Tim's not good. Oh no, Tim's really good at this too. It's a predictions. That's your reputation anyway now, Tim. I'm not even sure if it's actually accurate. So what are you going to go for here? The Manchester Derby 2024 edition in March.
I think if United go embarrassingly defensive, like just so deep and relinquish all notion of attacking, then they can keep the score down. But with all the injuries they've got and the rate that they concede shots, it's hard to see anything other than a convincing City win. I would say something like 4-1.
He's going 4-1. Joey?
Yeah, 3-0. I don't see them getting anything out of it.
John?
2-1 to Manchester City.
There we go. No one's giving United a prayer, which is probably fair. Well, from Manchester, we head next to a London derby.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Probably fair to say one of the lesser spotted London derbies, but it's to North London we go as Tottenham welcome Crystal Palace from the south side of the Thames. Spurs are an interesting case at the moment. I think that's fair to say. They were defeated by the mighty Wolves last time out, Tim. So is there much Ange Postecoglou would have taken from that to try and find a better way this time around?
No. He's going to play the same way every single week. And he's you know, unashamed about that. So I think he's just learning lessons about who can do it and who can't right now. You know, John's mentioned a few times how they've really overperformed their underlying numbers for most of the season, you know, helped by Son went on a freakishly good goal scoring run. Then Richarlison went on a freakishly good goal scoring run. They had Maddison, probably one of the best players in the Premier League for a month or two earlier in the season. So it didn't matter that they were conceding goals at a steady rate, which is what they're always going to do because of the number of chances they give up. So unless, yeah, someone starts freakishly scoring a lot of goals again, then I just think they'll be inconsistent from week to week. You know, logic dictates that they were never going to keep their numbers up for the whole season. So, you know, he's finding things out. He's finding out his best 11. He's finding out who can do it consistently. Someone like Bissouma was great at the start of the season, has now tailed off. Kulusevski's really hit and miss. Bentancur's struggled a little bit since he came back from his injury. Brennan Johnson, inconsistent. And yeah, his motto is to outscore the opposition, and that's not going to change. But obviously, I think the big question for Spurs is, you know, Daniel Levy really jumped on the Ange bandwagon at the start of the season. They had this fans forum thing and he was like, hey, it's Ange, and like getting rounds of applause and stuff like that. It was quite cringe, really. But he's got to back him in the market this summer. You know, they spent decent money last year, but obviously they sold Harry Kane for 100 million, their greatest ever player. So to be where they are now, I think is really impressive. But he'll need to be backed considerably in the summer because there's a lot of players in that squad that just can't do what he wants them to do.
I imagine qualifying for the Champions League would help as well with the old finances. Do you see it as a case of the numbers catching up with Spurs?
Yeah, and interesting hearing Tim talk about some of the players that have been missing, because I think against Wolves they were missing both of their fullbacks, and their fullbacks play an incredibly important role in their system, and they don't have like-for-like replacements. And I think part of the reason why Spurs have succeeded so much under Ange Postecoglou, because I spent a lot of time in the summer saying this is, you know, it's not an easy ask for a manager to move from a back three squad, which they had under Antonio Conte, to more of a back four squad, which is what Ange Postecoglou was probably going to do. Part of the reason why it's worked out so well is because the fullbacks in his system almost play like wingbacks. They even play push up into the third line of build up. They're super far ahead, and the system is designed to accommodate that. So it's worked out really well for them on one level. But the problem is that when you don't have Porro and you don't have Udogie, then they were playing Emerson Royale and Ben Davis, and those two simply don't offer the same sort of upside in and out of possession that the guys ahead of them in the pecking order do. So yeah, it's a case of improvements needing to come in the summer in the transfer market. Another area is wide forwards. So again, because of the moving from a back three squad to a back four squad, they haven't really had any of those really aggressive wide options who can sit on the touchline, isolate themselves against fullbacks, hit bylines and get the ball back across, which is the way that the system is designed to help players like Richarlison score. They've been playing Son out there. They've played Richarlison out there at times. Kulusevski's been playing out there when he's not so much, for me, a sort of static, explosive dribbler to get around fullbacks. They have brought in Brennan Johnson, but again, he doesn't seem to have the ability to just front up a fullback and go around him as well. So I think there's definitely a massive space in the ceiling space from where they are to where they can get, but it's going to be profiles being brought in, and the downside is that when you don't have the optimal players in the system this season, then they drop considerably, I think, in terms of how dangerous they can be.
I'm interested in your take on Vicario, because I know at the start of the season when they just kept winning, he was posting freakishly good numbers. Is that still the case?
Yeah, he's again, when Tim was talking about like the goal scoring over performance, there's also been a big bump from the goalkeeper as well. So we can use a metric called post shot expected goals, which essentially just assesses the trajectory of the ball once it's been hit and works out the likelihood of scoring it. And we can see from that Vicario was way over. So he saved, you know, multiple goals more than you might have expected him to do that. And again, that's going to help when you're playing this really aggressive style. You're leaving a lot of space, so you are going to be giving up big chances. And I would add Mickey van der Ven and Christian Romero to a lesser extent, but van der Ven can just cover so much space that he's just a cheat code in those sorts of scenarios. So they do play a really aggressive style of football. When they can cover for the space that they leave open, they will win games. But all it takes is for one moment where something goes wrong and you are giving up big chances. So again, it's like a high risk strategy. And another element to even add to that is that most managers will change the way that they're playing on the basis of game state. So if they're winning in a game or losing in a game or drawing in a game, you know, they'll think, oh, we've got 10 minutes to go, we're one goal up, let's just sit a little bit further back. Ange Postecoglou is on record saying he doesn't do that.
Don't do that, mate.
Is that your attempt?
Sort of.
It's Sean Dyche.
I didn't commit to
it's
it.
It's Sean Dyche, but Australian. So
Sean Dyche speaks like this, right? And he'll say, you know, the player here is north
keep going,
side.
John.
There.
Yeah, keep going.
And then you just have to slowly just add a little bit of Australian in there, and suddenly you've got Ange Postecoglou, mate.
I can't believe we're not videoing this.
That's quite good, right?
That was, yeah, I nailed it, John.
It's like having Rory Bremner in the room.
Absolutely nailed it. I want more of those over the rest of the pod. Palace are still a bit of a unknown, given Oliver Glasner, their new manager, has only had one game in charge. That was a 3-0 win against Burnley last weekend. So there's probably going to be tougher tests. Palace, funny old position, really. Elise's out, no Eze. Mark Gay is now out as well for a 6 to 8 weeks, I think, with a knee injury. Is there anyone else who can change a game for Palace at the moment, Tim, do we feel?
Oh, blimey.
Do we get Jordan Ayew out?
Jefferson Lerma, Jordan Ayew. No, not really.
I think Ayew's a pretty decent, like, yeah, in terms of like the base level of Premier League player. I think he is someone who will change a game, and he will keep running the whole game and win fouls, but also, you know, pops up and scores goals when they're needed.
Yeah, one thing Palace needs to improve is against the better teams like Spurs. So the only times they've scored two or more in any match this season in the Premier League, they put 3 past Burnley last weekend, 3 past Sheffield United in Jan, 3 past Brentford, 2 past Burnley, and 2 past Everton in the first half of the season. The only other two apart from that, they somehow beat Wolves 3-2 at the start of the season when Wolves were still sort of figuring out what's going on. And of course, at the Etihad, they scored twice because that's what they do. But otherwise, my point is they can't manage more than a goal a game unless the teams they're playing are pretty awful, which suggests, you know, Eze and Elise can overwhelm, I guess, weaker opposition. But in tight games, they really struggle to control the narrative, especially in midfield. So we'll see what Glasner does and what he's done on the training ground. But that's their recent record anyway.
I feel like the other thing Palace need to improve is the feeling around the place. Like, I know a lot of clubs that are in the Championship who would love to have had a long run of steady Premier League football, but the problem with having that is it gets a bit dull if you feel like you can't kick on.
They're just sort of permanently 12th, aren't they? Actually, I think they're quite a bit lower than that at the moment, but it feels like...
Well, they're 13th now when they were 11th last season. So right. you've averaged it out.
On average.
Beautifully.
But there's something like, I think in every year for 10 years, they've been between 44 and 50 points or something like that. They just always get an incredibly similar
number
of points.
They're the Birmingham of the Premier League, basically.
Yeah, who have been in the Championship for such a long time.
Shall we have some predictions then for Spurs hosting Palace? John, I'll come to you first.
2-1, Spurs.
Nice. No clean sheet then. Joey?
I'll go a bit of a new manager bounce. 1-1.
3-1, Spurs.
Right, next we head to the northeast.
Hi, I'm Ali Maxwell and I'm the host of the Athletic Football Tactics podcast. And what we love to do is provide measured, detailed analysis of tactical and technical aspects of the beautiful game. At the top of the Premier League, 2 points separate 3 teams. It could be the closest and most exciting title race for years. For our latest episode, we've scoured over those 3 title contenders to see if we can scientifically suss out who will be crowned Premier League champions in May. Will it be Man City, Liverpool, or Arsenal? If that sounds up your street, then check out the Athletic Football Tactics podcast wherever you get yours.
Newcastle United host Wolves. That's exciting. They're all big games for Eddie Howe these days. This does feel like another one. Wolves are in really good form. They only seem to lose when I watch them in person. That's what I've deduced from the last few weeks. Sorry about that, Tim. They're coming back off their Brighton FA Cup success. Newcastle scraped through, John, against Blackburn, wasn't it? That's right, at Ewood Park. And they're in a curious position, Newcastle. I feel like Eddie Howe is kind of on the verge of being under real pressure, yet there's just enough each time, just enough.
The allusion that I always make when people ask me about Newcastle at the moment is with early Klopp Liverpool, where they came in with the plan being to be really intense and aggressive out of possession and have that not simply as a way of controlling games without the ball, but also scoring goals with the ball as well. And obviously that worked really well last season when they were not playing in a whole host of other competitions. This season's obviously been slightly different with the introduction of European football as well. Yeah, what we're seeing now is the realisation that you cannot simply live on intense football alone and challenge at the top of the league. We saw Jurgen Klopp had to make decisions and change the strategy in order for Liverpool to become competitive at the top. And I think Newcastle are in that same moment now. They need to make their decision about how do we have a more sustainable way of challenging at the top, which isn't just going to burn us out after a season.
So does that require the same head coach to do that? Or I feel like I'm being very preemptive here because they're not really, are they even in that situation?
I mean, I think, you know, we saw that happen with Jurgen Klopp. Jurgen Klopp came from the Bundesliga where he had been largely playing gegenpressing football. But he was able to make those changes. And part of the reason that part of the method that he used to change things was bringing in assistant coaches who were able to bolster them, I suppose, on the tactical side. So it's not always the case, I think, that you have to ditch a manager if you want to try and make these changes. But the big question is going to be if Eddie Howe can't do that, then is he the right manager for them going forward? And I'd be sure that the board and the owners at Newcastle will want to be challenging at the top. They won't be happy for them to stay away from there for too long. So yeah, he's definitely on a timescale for that.
The good news for Newcastle is that they have lost just one of their last 8 Premier League home games against Wolves. That's good news, because the bad news is they are winless in their last 4 Premier League home games. So they kind of need to do something at St James's Park, Jerry.
Yeah, they've just been so like open recently. I mean, that was it 4-4 with Luton, conceding sort of 2-3-4 goals in pretty much every game. They just don't look solid at all. And in that first season under Howe, they just were just so solid at the back, conceded very few goals. It really is just like watching a completely different team now. And I can see why Newcastle fans love Eddie Howe, and you know, he's been so brilliant in that first year and a half, but he does need some results pretty quickly, I think.
I always think of momentum in these situations, because they had that. Eddie Howe was doing a brilliant job, and then that's kind of stalled. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, well, Dan Ashworth is probably going to leave as well. And this big project that everyone was kind of really getting behind, it's possibly stalling, but I suppose more to the fact that it's sort of coming to a point where it's going to have to reinvent itself a little bit to keep that or gain more momentum again.
Yeah, I know what you mean. They've had their initial...
Okay, there, yeah.
Yeah.
We know I don't ask questions, so that's more the statement. What do you think, Tim?
They've had their initial phase, and now it's time for Newcastle 2.0, I think is what you're saying.
Why not?
Or yeah. Questioning. Yeah. I think Eddie Howe in a normal world has deserved another season, and he's probably paying a little bit for overachieving last year. And they've had probably the worst injury luck of anyone in the league, I think. They've probably overtaken Spurs now, and Liverpool are giving it a go, but you know. So yeah, they're not doing what City and Chelsea did, hiring, firing, and massive overturn of players. You know, they signed Chris Wood and Dan Byrne, for God's sake. Yeah, so I feel like they're looking a little bit more longer term, and they'll be sympathetic to the issues he's gone through this season. You know, we highlighted on last week's show the defensive inconsistency in terms of being able to select the chosen back four, back five, with Nick Pope included. So yeah, I think it's a real shame for Newcastle that they didn't get a decent FA Cup draw, because if they'd have got Coventry at home, then you'd be saying, well, they've got loads to play for still this season. But the fact they got Man City away makes that a bit more difficult. But I'd still fancy them to get into Europe again, which considering everything that's happened, would be a good season.
Absolutely. Well, it's Wolves who've got Coventry, and you know, Wolves are in great form, Tim, and a great opportunity to continue.
They'll definitely beat Coventry at home, won't they?
Yeah, we don't do very well against bad teams. So I really struggled against Sheffield United at home last weekend. It was tough watch. But better against opposition, where they leave you a bit of room.
Does every football fan feel like their team? There's a whole website, Norwich City fans will know, called Along Come Norwich, where basically... Along Come Norwich and they will end your run for you.
Spurs have a saying called Dr. Tottenham will see you now.
Yeah, but they always beat Pep Guardiola. So
even Man City fans have this.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. John, I've got a great question here for you. Who would win a race between Pedro Neto and Anthony Gordon?
Yeah, it depends how long the race is, right?
What distance would you set it?
I mean, I don't engage in such frivolous activities.
All right, how about a prediction then? Newcastle against Wolves.
Prediction, Pedro Neto versus Anthony Gordon. I think Anthony Gordon is faster than Pedro Neto. Pedro Neto's had a bunch of knee injuries, so set the optimal Gordon distance and he would win. In terms of this game, yeah, I think this is another one of those games where Wolves will be able to play the underdog and bait the opposition forward and create space for themselves to attack and get away with it again. I think that this will be a draw 2-2.
Should have stuck to the Pedro Neto, Anthony Gordon race. How about you, Joey?
I'll go 1-0 Wolves. Early goal and then shut up.
Gary O'Neill master plan continues, Tim.
Yeah, they're, as people like to say, they're in a good moment. The atmosphere at Molineux Wednesday night was as good as I wasn't there, but
as good as you haven't seen
the TV and via people saying on Twitter. Yeah, as good as it's been for a few years, to be honest, since the Nuno days. And they managed to rest Neto and Sarabia. Oh, they both come off the bench. But yeah, they're key chance creators. I fancy us to win 1-0.
Oh, dear. Point deducted for the use of the word us.
Sorry.
Well, there we go. That's exciting. Any other business? There are other interesting games. Anything anyone wants to flag up?
Everton have a post-point deduction reduction gate versus West Ham.
Will that be galvanised?
There was galvanised the other way, though. Is it the same galvanisation if you're going back up?
Oh, that's a good point, actually. They don't need many more points to be properly safe now.
The points deduction was reduced from 10 points to 6, so that means their chances of being relegated are now just 4.4%, according to Opta.
I've seen some Everton fans, they call themselves unflushable.
Oh, what an image that is.
So Villa-Luton, it feels like a big one because if Villa beat Luton, which, you know, they should, I say that now, and if Man City beat Man United, which they should, then that gap is then... So we're assuming fifth place gets Champions League, which looks pretty likely at the moment, then the gap between Villa and Man United is 11 points and Villa have much better goal difference. So that looks pretty good going with 11 games to go.
21 better goal difference.
Yeah, so you'd hope the goal difference at least would stay. So barring a pretty spectacular collapse, that would make Villa, Spurs, Arsenal, Liverpool and Man City the Champions League teams, which would be exciting.
We're assuming that the fifth place is going to the Premier League.
Yeah, which I think 82%...
It looks like it's going to unfold that way, doesn't it?
I was just looking at that top five thinking there's just a bunch of fun managers in the Premier League right now with like different projects going on, all very different. So you've got Jurgen Klopp obviously leaving at the end of the season, but then Pep Guardiola, Mikel Arteta, people throw them together a lot, but I think they're quite different. And then we've got Emery and Postecoglou. I think it's just it's a really fun mix of different coaches, so...
You've stopped ahead of sixth place there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stop the fun there.
Remember the years of Mourinho versus Benitez? It's better now, isn't it?
But don't write it off happening again. We never know. Well, I think we're done for today. Thank you so much, Tim. Thank you.
Cheers.
Jerry, it's been a pleasure.
Thank you very much.
Likewise, John.
Yeah, I've had a great time.
Good news, AO will be back on Monday and we will be back next Friday as usual. Thank you so much for listening.
You've been listening to the Athletic Football Podcast Weekend Preview. The producer was Mike Stavrou and the executive producer was Aidy Moorhead. To listen to other great Athletic podcasts for free, search for The Athletic on Apple, Spotify and all the usual places. The Athletic Football Podcast is an Athletic Media Company production.
The Athletic.